It's Wednesday, March 18th, 2009, and you're listening to episode 140 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 50 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
My name is Pat.
And my name is Chris.
Chris, where are you recording from today? There's a little bit of an echo, but it sounds pretty good in there.
Tonight, we're trying a new recording studio here at the old household. We're recording in my basement bathroom.
Nice. Like,
you like that?
You're like right on the throne, as it were.
I'm sitting on King Hussey's throne. Yeah, here's the deal. See, Dan's been having audio issues forever, and because he's a little bitch and can't, you know, I just have to make him happy, I decided I would move where I'm recording into a much more enclosed location. So I'm in my 6x4 bathroom here with all my equipment, my laptop appropriately on my lap, and I don't know. Right now, it sounds looking pretty good.
What I want you to do, Chris, is I want you to turn around there, open up the lid, and like sort of lean into the bowl with the microphone and talk that way.
Give us a flush.
Yeah, I think we need a good flush.
Oh, flush. We need a flush.
You want a flush? All right, hold on.
We need a flush.
Here's proof that I'm in the bathroom. Hold on.
This is the dirtiest episode we've ever recorded.
How's that working for you?
That sounded kind of meaty.
When you think the potosphere can't sink any lower, we lowered the bar.
Wow.
Want to give a shout out to a charity that's going on actually not too far from here in St. Louis, Missouri.
It's called Fill Chad's Wallet with Green Cash.
There's a game store called Just for Fun, which is located in Peoria, Illinois, and they are having a con on March 28th, and they're calling this Jeff Con 1. And the reason they're calling it that is because a guy that is in their local gaming community by the name of Jeff has recently undergone brain surgery to have a really significant tumor removed.
Wow.
And they want to help this guy out with his medical bills. So they're holding a charity convention where some significant portion, maybe it's all of the ticket price, is going to go to help this guy pay his bills. So if you're in the Peoria, Illinois area and you want to stop by and just have a good gaming con and in the process support something really good, then be sure to check the show notes. We will give a link to the game store that is hosting this con, and they have a pretty good amount of info on the con on their front page. So I'm calling it a con. I don't know if it's really more of a game day or a con, but you know, you get the idea.
A good time for a good cause. That's all you really need.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. What we're going to talk about today is a topic that we talked about a while back, but some people on the forums have asked us to revisit some old topics now that we are 2-3 years past the original recordings. We have different hosts. In some cases, our views have kind of evolved on these things. And they gave us a list of a couple things they want us to revisit. And we're not going to do this as a series. We'll just pick these off every so often. But we're going to do one of those today. And the topic that we have selected is evil campaigns.
Dan, do you even remember what your original opinion on evil campaigns was? Because I sure don't remember what mine is.
I do, actually.
Cool.
And so I can kind of restate my opinion at some point, maybe, and we'll...
So I can sound like a complete hypocrite.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
excellent.
Yeah.
And the difference would be?
Nothing, really.
And I will bring the fresh perspective, since I wasn't here before.
Quite honestly, Pat, you'll bring... I think this will be interesting, because you'll be, you know, tackling this strictly from a player's perspective when it comes to dealing, you know, with an evil campaign and an evil character.
I think something we're going to have to do to couch this discussion properly and to avoid a pointless and overburdened tangent, we're not going to define evil.
All right.
Okay. You people know what a bad guy is. We're not going to get caught up in some pedantic morality debate.
Yeah.
It's a bunch of bad guys, okay? We're not going to get into the fuzzy shades of alignment discussion, because that's...
It's boring.
It's boring. It's overdone. It won't get us anywhere.
Yep.
So we're assuming in this campaign, you're playing bad guys. We're not talking about dark heroes. We're not talking about nobody understands me. I don't care what you think about the Crow. We're just talking about bad guys. You're playing necromancers. You're playing evil overlords. You're playing Joker instead of Batman.
Let me ask you this. Have you heard of a campaign setting called Necessary Evil?
Yes.
I have not played this because I can't find anybody who wants to play a superhero game with me. But It's a superhero game.
You've never asked around this table. I'd happily do a superhero game.
Sure, I would too.
I thought you didn't like superhero games.
I think
games,
there are many difficulties about them that make them extremely hard to translate into RPGs.
That's a different topic that we've covered already.
The point being.
So anyway, Necessary Evil, the reason I bring it up, because it's an evil campaign setting. There aren't very many. There are very few.
Right.
But just to give a quick rundown, it's a world where there are cape superheroes. I mean, we're talking cape spandex superheroes, right? And evil supervillains of the same sort of caliber, like out of comic books. And it's a whole world full of them. You know, it's like a normal, it's Earth, but they fight each other and stuff, and everything's going normal, just like in a comic book. All of a sudden, an alien invasion happens. And before the aliens, and I might have the minor details of the story right, but this is the gist of it. The superheroes all band together and fly out into space to meet the aliens and defeat them. Only they lose, and the aliens slaughter them, all of them. And then the aliens roll in and take over Earth. But you still have supervillains, and that's where the players come in. They play supervillains, and the supervillains aren't going to sit here and go, no, I wanted to take over the Earth, or whatever motivations they had. And they certainly don't necessarily want to work with the aliens. So the whole campaign setting is you play a supervillain, but you're not necessarily the bad guy anymore. You're still the bad guy, but it's a necessary evil.
There's the first point that I would pick out that I think is going to be relevant to any game focused on evil.
Mm-hmm.
And it's what you just described about the fact that the supervillains are trying to unseat the aliens.
Yeah.
You have effectively two evils opposing each other. Now, I realize good guys may not always get along. The Superman-Batman thing, they may disagree on how to do it or have different allegiances or whatever. But I think that's going to be doubly big with an evil campaign. Because one of the presumed traits of an evil game, and let me stress presumed, and maybe we can unpack why it's presumed and how it may not be accurate, is that everyone's in this for some very, very singular selfish thing. Usually power, or some form of power like wealth. And if you have a whole bunch of them together, well, you can't have five people as the emperor of the world. If there's the ring of ultimate power, it can't go on 10 hands.
Yeah, that's very true.
Great example of this, Lord of the Rings. They didn't really play this up in the movie, but in the books, there was a real rivalry between Sauron and Saruman. Yeah, Saruman was actually trying to get the ring for himself because he wanted to be that power. Whereas, obviously, Sauron wanted to be that power, and it's his ring.
Their orcs were totally different. Their orcs didn't even get along.
Yeah, and you cannot fight together that way.
Yeah.
And so one of the biggest struggles I think you're going to have is you've got to be really careful in the group template to figure out what it is that's going to keep the party together. Now, I think if you don't play evil characters that are totally one-dimensional, this will work. Because you know what? You can have guys that are evil, but also friends.
Sure.
You can have guys that are evil, but also have the same allegiance. For example, you're not all playing Darth Vader, but maybe you are all playing Stormtroopers. But I would definitely be very careful in the group template, because the likelihood of the party going in wildly different directions and trying to kill each other is very, very high. Or at least be prepared and say, that's the kind of game I want.
But what you're talking about seems to be a bit more, well, with the exception of the Stormtrooper example, what you're talking about seems to be a bit more on a grander, you know, a grander scale. You think of that type of organization really works when it comes to, you know, the smaller scale, when you are just your low-level characters. Can that work as well?
Give me an example.
Well, I'll give you an example. Like, for example, you're all first-level characters. You all are evil and maybe working for the same organization. But is that singular selfishness still going to kind of permeate that group, even though you're all relatively low power? Or is it something that's going to crop up when those individual characters begin to realize their own power and potential?
I think almost it would get worse, because now you're trying to claw your way to the top.
Yeah. And then you're kind of clawing your way to the top together. You know, going back to Dan's point, you say you have to be careful not to make it to where the characters backstab each other, unless you want that sort of competitive type of game. But maybe you and the game master, the group and the game master, can arrange it to where the culmination of the plot is a standoff. Maybe the players are brought together under a temporary alliance, and you know they're working together for a shorter term, maybe even a long-term goal that they need to work together, but there's going to be this breaking point. So there's always this tension, but they have to follow the alliance for whatever reasons their characters are in. But at the like culmination of the campaign, maybe the fight with the big bad guy isn't a fight with the big bad guy. Maybe it's a fight with each other.
Right, which of course implies that you're intending to run this as a limited campaign.
Sure.
This is not going to be a long ongoing thing.
Well, I only run limited campaigns, so that's the only one way to run a campaign.
It all depends, I guess, on your permutation of evil. And I don't want to get into a discussion about alignment or anything like that, but your lawful evil type characters, those who like to, you know, basically screw everybody over in a certain way, are, I think, are more apt to get along better than those who just want to just do wanton destruction, you know, or you can't necessarily mix the two. In other words, a bunch of wanton destruction evil types are probably also going to get along fairly well because they all want to do the same thing.
Right. I think really your options here are fairly limited in that if you don't want the party to implode quickly in a limited campaign, like Chad was suggesting, if you do, then hey, it doesn't matter. Let them start off at each other's throats and end with half of them dead. Yeah,
I think that it depends on the length of the short campaign. If you're talking like a really short thing, yeah, you know, it's like they're Guns and Roses. Everything was roses when we held onto the guns. The pressure is keeping us together, but when the pressure goes away, we explode. That's a good short campaign. But if you want your campaign to last any length, I think you have to arrange it outside the game of the characters don't necessarily have to fall on each other.
I think, though, you end up having to do one of two things, which is you have to either have something forcing them together. Mm-hmm. There's a higher up in the organization that they're never going to unseat. There's a power they're opposing they can only oppose together. Or you have to be careful to really nuance the evil.
Or you can go the other way. You don't have to nuance it at all. And you can do that sort of golden age silliness of comic books where we had the League of Evil. And what brought us together? We're evil, and evil is always hiring.
Right.
And, you know, it's that sort of thing. It's like, why do you guys work together? Well, because we're Team Evil.
Right.
You know, and that's sort of a more lighthearted and a little bit campier game, which is fine. I mean, that would be hilarious to run that.
You know, something else you got to watch, and I don't want to dig back into the discussion we had in episode 130. I think it was 130.
Good, because I can't remember what
about 130. Morality and role-playing. But you've got to be pretty careful also that the definition of evil that everyone at the table is using either is not, I should say definition, the incarnation of evil they're going to choose.
You see, that's where I think you could run into some problems because you've got one person's definition of evil, you know, slaughtering children, or another person's definition of evil and, you know, stealing money from the poor. You know, yes, both are inherently evil, but one in a certain sense is a bit more palpable.
Well, it's not even, it's along those lines, but it's the fear that the type of evil I choose may deeply disturb the person sitting across the table from me. And I won't go into detail, but the one or two evil campaigns we tried to run, this was a problem. Mike and I in particular, Mike being the ex-host from the show, he and I in particular used to have this problem that he would choose kinds of evil that really unsettled me, and I would choose kinds of evil that really unsettled him.
Sure.
I mean, nobody gets bothered by a hero, but you've got to be careful because I remember even going back to the early World of Darkness stuff, that they specifically said in the books that these games were meant to be an exploration of evil.
Right.
But there's always a possibility in there that, I mean, you get really into a game like that and you stop exploring and you start indulging. Or even if you're not indulging, that at some point you're just going to kind of disturb your... I mean, have you ever had a character you've had to stop playing because he was disturbing you?
No, never.
I have.
I don't know. To me, it's just a game. I think that when you get to that point, everybody at the table is taking the game way too seriously and needs to step back. And that could be a good campaign, an evil campaign, or whatever campaign.
Well, just, you know, it kind of comes back to really knowing who you're sitting at the table with. And it is. It's a lot of it is that agreement beforehand. It's like, yeah, okay, everybody, hey, let's do an evil campaign. I mean, you know, and I tried that once as on the player's side of things. And it just didn't sit well with me. I wasn't really grooving on what we were trying to accomplish. It just, for me, it was very counterintuitive, you know, and it was hard for me to wrap my head around playing someone who was evil. In fact, my character actually wasn't evil. They had evil tendencies, but they weren't necessarily evil.
You're so noncommittal. I think you sort of hit the nail on the head, at least for what I would struggle with, Chris, is the fact that there's no clear-cut guidance as to what you're really going to try to accomplish. I mean, when you play the standard more toward the good side, specifically, you know, characters, you kind of know what you're going for. It's like, yeah, there's probably something that's going on wrong, so you're going to try to correct that in some way. But when you flip that around, what is it? What are you doing? I mean, there's something kind of good that we need to stop. But it is, it's harder. I think it's a challenge. I think that it done right, and not just done for, you know, so total slapstick, off the wall, goofery. Sure. I think playing an evil campaign could be a real challenge for role players because of these issues.
Yeah.
What is our motivation to really be, you know,
I think
cliche?
On your point, Dan, earlier too, about getting too disturbing, I think before you even start the campaign, you need to just basically sit down with the characters and do some rules of engagement.
Yeah.
Because I know that, say, us, that the four of us sat down and we said, okay, we're going to play Necessary Evil. We're all going to be bad guys. We're really evil and all that sort of stuff. And I look at Pat and I say, well, Pat, how evil do you want to go? Do you want to rob banks? Oh, sure. Do you want to kill people? Sure. Do you want to rip cars in half? Sure. Do you want to kill kids?
Nope.
You would stop.
Yep.
You would draw a hard line on that.
Uh-huh.
And that would disturb you. So, yeah, uh-huh. I think that before going into the game, you have to kind of set some rules of engagement.
I was thinking the same thing when Dan was mentioning that, too. It's like, yeah, you just... I think it's very necessary here. You know, it's not necessary on the other side, but here it is because, like you said, everybody has their own sort of their boundary points. And and you can get into those hard, those really difficult areas. And you could just draw up some ground rules, say, hey, here's where we're not going to go. Let's draw these lines.
Because it's so weird. Like in a role-playing game, I know that there's people I could sit down with if we played an evil campaign and I could say, well, I have absolutely no problem killing kids. Because it's a game and I don't care, but you would have a problem with it. And I respect that.
Uh-huh.
And then somebody else could come at me and say, well, we're going to torture and rape people. And it's like, well, okay, guys, I kind of have a problem with the torture and rape thing.
Yeah.
And so you kind of got to feel that out a little bit.
My kobold didn't eat babies in Fear the Con 2 and only ate chickens.
Wow.
Yeah.
Man, what a hippie.
I think it just didn't get a chance to get to the babies, but but it only ate a chicken.
Now, see, on the other hand, if you play Kobolds Ate My Baby, would you play a kobold that ate babies?
You know, it's outrageous. Just, it's outrageous. Yeah. I'm like, okay, you just sort of have to think of it as, you know, whatever. And it was fun, but it was great. My kobold was, it had everything going for it. I, on the random rolls, like, I was hungry, which means I will eat anything that bleeds, like. And one of the other kobolds was smells like baby. So this guy was totally screwed. I was just going, can I just go ahead and eat him now? It was great. Yeah, it's an interesting topic because it just presents so many challenges, you know, but yeah, definitely the boundaries. But I still struggle with the, you know, basically what is the overall, you know, what brings them together?
Yeah.
What are they doing? I mean, what are you trying to accomplish?
Yeah. Does evil have goals, or is evil just wanton destruction? Yeah.
You know what? If you're going to go with that statement, does evil have goals? Then I think you get into, you know, another point worth bringing up, disguising evil.
Mm-hmm.
Because, for example, you could do a role-playing game set in, you know, 1980s or late 70s communist Russia. Have it set that way that you're against these crazy people who want nothing but chaos and disorder.
Oh my God, and then I could play Ronald Reagan and be the worst evil imaginable to these people.
But see, exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly my point. That's from a Western perspective, communism was evil.
Interesting campaign idea.
But if you're in there, then all of a sudden all these Westerners are looking like nothing but morally corrupt people and that need to be eliminated.
Yeah, where the bad guys aren't necessarily the bad guys. They're just... You know, it's the difference. What's the difference between a terrorist and a freedom fighter?
Well, and I want the one
who wins the war.
This is where I want to be real careful. Yeah. We're not talking about bad guys. We're talking about evil villains.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That we're not talking about perspective issues.
We're talking about a campaign where the characters are like, yes, I am really terrible person.
Exactly. But you're not talking about playing the average Russian off the street. You're talking about playing one of Stalin's executioners.
Yeah. Right. Well, and even then, what Stalin's executioners could say, you know, you have to break a few eggs, and they make excuses and they dehumanize.
To some degree, I think that's necessary.
Yeah.
Because as we've been talking about, I think if you play a super cartoonized, characterized version of evil, then the game is either going to be very short.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, put Mummer on Skeletor in a party. I mean, what's really
in?
I mean, this might be a great game for Fear of the Con 3.
No, this is fantastic.
I love it. Yeah,
can I play figures. Boss Hog?
But you know how long? If you want to play a long and serious campaign, you can't,
right?
Because there's no depth to their motivations. They just want to rule the world and have the ultimate power, and there's no nuance to what they're trying to do.
What's wrong with playing a campaign?
Well, there's not. You know,
Let me ask you this.
But it depends on what you want out of the campaign.
Can you play a game that now? Obviously, not Skeletor and Mumra and all that sort of stuff. Although, actually, that would really be cool. But in a campaign that is that sort of level, right?
Right.
Can you add nuance to that? Can you make it deep and still be fun and silly and lighthearted?
Oh, yeah, certainly. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think whether it's silly or serious, you're going to hit up against the same issues of trying to figure out why it is and all the many things these people are trying to overturn. Each other's not on the list.
Yeah.
Just give Skeletor some daddy issues and you've got yourself some deep character introspection.
That's true.
Yeah, just ask Ronald Moore.
I'm sorry, I don't know who Ronald Moore is.
Battlestar Galactica writer. Your character daddy issues and they're automatically deep.
Yeah. God, they all do have daddy issues, don't they?
And they're all
even the Cylons have daddy issues.
Yep. They do. All of them do. And that's the central plot they're exploring in every episode right now. It's not the war.
Adama
it's daddy
has
issues.
Daddy issues. Apollo, Starbuck. Yeah, they all have daddy issues, don't they?
Mm-hmm. And see, and maybe this is really where we should have started this discussion, is you've got to really know what you want
daddy
out of this.
Issues?
Yeah. You've got to really know what you want out of this campaign, because
isn't that the question for any campaign, though?
I suppose it is, but I guess maybe where this discussion kind of goes off for me is I just kind of presume that with Evil, it was a lot more cut and dry. That if you're playing an Evil campaign, you want one very narrow set of things out of it. And if we go back to the first episode we did on this, I think that's kind of where I lost my way there. Mm-hmm. Was my central point on the first recording was that Evil really only has one ultimate goal, which is power.
Right.
Which is every form of evil is basically trying to exert some power you ought not have. But I guess in a way, you could describe good as the same way. Mm-hmm. Except the only difference is you're saying they ought to have the power. But it's still ultimately, you want to bring peace to the land, you have to get some form of power to do that.
Why does Superman want his power? So he can do good.
Right.
You know, why does insert evil villain here want to have his power? So he could do bad. But there's a great book called Soon I Will Be Invincible. And it's a deconstruction of a superhero genre book. And it is absolutely fantastic. And it's taken from the perspective of the good guys and the bad guys. You know, flips chapters, does that sort of thing. The bad guy story is wonderful. And the bad guy, he wants to rule the world. And he's been trying over and over and over and over again to rule the world. Well, why does he want to rule the world? Because he thinks, because he's this genius, he's the only one who can do it right.
Right.
And
Hitler want to rule the world?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, he thought he was doing a good thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, he thought he was trying to set up the world the way it ought to be and correcting its wrongs.
If I remember the story right, it also goes back to something earlier we were talking about. This guy draws lines for himself. He won't kill people because that's what amateurs do.
And in a certain way, more recently, Dr. Horrible is a good example of essentially an evil campaign set up to be enjoyable.
Right.
You know, you have sympathy for Dr. Horrible. You like Dr. Horrible. You think he's a neat character. He sings well.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, he gets what he wants for the most part, but it goes in a way in which he didn't necessarily expect. And I think that you're absolutely right. In the sense that, yes, you really do have to know what you want to accomplish, what you're going in for when you do this. And yes, though you should do that with every campaign, with non-evil campaigns, you've got a little bit of leeway. I think with evil campaigns, it's more something where you do have to be very, very focused on what you're going after. Otherwise, going astray will be very easy and could quickly kill it.
Well, let me ask you guys this. Something that Chris mentioned there, like Dr. Horrible is a character you have sympathy for. You totally do. He's a bad guy, but you have sympathy for him. What do you have to have for your player, for your characters? Do you have to, like, when you play good guys, it's like, yeah, my guy's really cool, and he does these good things. I'm really rooting for him, and he has these goals, and we're trying to accomplish these goals and tell the story. And with a bad guy, do you have those same things?
I think, in a way, You have to.
Yeah.
And I think that's what
or
I was...
Or can you play a character that you totally absolutely loathe. Hate?
I don't... Here's the thing. I don't think you could play a character you absolutely hate for very long because you couldn't play them well. Because right. it'd be hard to understand them. We understand the things we have sympathy with. Mm-hmm. A good example of this would be Falling Down. I watched that movie, and I have an enormous amount of sympathy for defense.
Sure.
And I don't think I'm entirely supposed to. But yeah. just because of the experiences of my life, I kind of do.
People relate to it.
And if yeah. I think, though...
But he kills people.
Right. This is what I was talking
innocent
about.
Innocent people.
And this is what I was talking yeah. about earlier with my issue where I play characters that disturb me.
Right.
Is I understand them a little too well. Because there are things inside of me that, just like there are inside of every person, that are not good.
Right.
And we ought to be finding ways to deconstruct them, not build them
yeah,
up. Do you think... that maybe part of the whole issue that makes us so hard is our storytelling traditions. Because there was a time in history when we told, we being the human race, told...
No, we being Fear the Boot.
Yes. Fear the Boot, back in 1825,
yes.
was telling deep stories about bad people. Mm-hmm. Or what you might say are neutral people with serious flaws, or however you want to try and describe that. But there came a time in our storytelling, you know, in the decades past, where bad guys were simply very shallow foils for the hero. And for a time, the heroes were equally shallow. But then as we started coming out of that, and you can see this really clearly in comic books, as we started coming out of that, we started putting depth back into the heroes. Mm-hmm. We started asking, what are these people really like? What goes on in their home life? Despite all the good they do, they're just like us. And now it seems like we are just recently starting to ask the question, okay, we've talked about what makes the good guy good.
Yeah.
Now, what makes the bad guy do what he does?
Mm-hmm.
And we're kind of re-exploring these issues. And it seems like, I think it's so hard to create a deep evil character.
Yeah.
Because we have so few examples to draw from in recent storytelling until maybe very right. recently.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, one evil character, I guess, and this would be strictly in the movie sense, because not knowing the full history on this guy, but Oscar Schindler, in a certain way, was an evil character. He was a war profiteer, which, you know, is regarded as evil. And yes, he did save quite a number of people during World War II, but yet at the same time, wasn't he still war profiteering? Using these people for his war profiteering efforts?
Well, sir, he was also a war profiteer. He's a womanizer, an adulterer. Sure. I mean,
the cheated on his wife. Yeah, and he...
He had plenty of evil qualities, but yet he still ended up doing something that many people still would consider to be a very, very good deed, but yet at the same time, he was still behaving in a somewhat evil manner.
Right. I think that's a lot of the concepts behind, to go back to the beginning of the episode, of necessary evil, is that, yeah, these guys are bad guys, but they are the last best hope of the human race. And they're all supervillains.
Yeah, maybe therein lies another interesting question for a campaign type, the redemption story.
That's exactly what I'm doing in our current campaign.
That you start off, I mean, just at these despicable depths.
My character I'm playing is, I would consider my character to be an evil character.
Yeah, I mean, could Lex Luthor, in this necessary evil situation, see enough suffering that finally his heart becomes a little more tender?
Right.
That maybe he's not such a cold and selfish person anymore.
Well, you can't be cold and selfish and get elected president, I guess.
It seems like what you're sort of talking about here is a sort of like a reluctant hero or a fallen hero. Mm-hmm. To me, that sort of runs contrary to running an evil campaign. If what you're saying is, well, we've got all these evil characters, but they're just misunderstood or something that's like, maybe they can be redeemed. All right. of a sudden, what do they become? It's like they're not evil anymore.
Yeah.
Now they're shades of gray or they're, and I know that's what you're trying to do with your character, but I mean, we're talking about like playing an evil campaign.
Well, I don't
to me, that runs contrary to it.
I don't think it's a matter of they're misunderstood. There's a difference between an explanation and an excuse.
Well, and that's actually a bad time. I don't mean misunderstood.
What I'm pushing for is, I think on the one hand, if you make their evil so minor or so understandable or maybe even so debatable, then like you said, you kind of get a point. You're not really playing an evil campaign anymore. You're playing dark heroes or something.
Right. Like, yeah, it's like it's a
conversely, I think, and this was the point I was making more recently, that if you simplify their evil to the point that, oh, they're just bad and that's all there is to the story, well, you end up with this very cartoony story. Image of evil. And I think what's more interesting is, for example, I am fascinated by looking at what we would consider the most evil men in history and hearing about their lives before they did that evil. You know, what does it take to make a person into this? Because I think almost we as society do a disservice to ourselves by saying, well, we shouldn't humanize them. Well, if we do that, we're now saying this person has an evil that regular people don't do or regular people aren't capable of. We have to, in some degree, internalize it to realize that, you know what? Pride cometh before the fall. We're capable of these things, too. And that's how we beat that evil within ourselves, is by being honest about that fact. And so I think you've got to find this middle balance for the type of game I want. Now, it depends on the type of game you're trying to run. If you're trying to run, you know, kind of a more humorous, lighthearted game.
Evil is always hiring. And
yeah.
Evil. We have a great dental plan.
Yeah, precisely. Then by all means, Skeletor and Mummer on a party make perfect sense.
Yeah.
Or if you just want to play kind of a hack and slash Monty Hall, the evil version of a dungeon crawl, I guess a dungeon create or whatever. That's another great thing about evil campaigns is evil people build empires.
That's true. It's the heroes that destroy empires.
Yeah.
I mean, again, it's like, what's the difference between a freedom fighter and a terrorist?
Yeah, video
Who
games
wins?
Kinda, video games kind of have this down with the whole, what was the series? Dungeon Builder or Dungeon Master?
Oh,
I can't think of the name
of it. You play a bad guy building a dungeon.
You play a bad guy building a dungeon. Or, you know, think games like Black and White.
Or Overlord.
Yeah. It's games like that that give you a sense that in addition to the micro role-playing game, evil characters...
Look at Grand Theft Auto. I mean, the ones where they actually have story in them and stuff,
right.
And the character talks. That's a game that follows the exploits of some very, very bad people. And they're great stories. They're absolutely fantastic stories. So, yeah, I totally think that you can make likable characters who do bad things in a bad world. And you can have fun with it, and you can be serious, or you can be silly. Totally.
I guess if I was to kind of boil down the advice it seems like we're arriving at here, it would be, number one, understand the kind of game you want to run.
Right.
Long-term, short-term, silly, serious.
Yeah, somewhere in the middle.
Number two.
Which is advice I would give to any game.
Yeah. Number two, everyone at the table needs to share their boundaries.
Yeah.
Don't play something that's going to upset everyone at the table, or upset someone at the table.
Mm-hmm.
And then number three, be sure you've got a carefully crafted group template, which we would recommend for any game. Mm-hmm. But in an evil game,
we don't follow ourselves.
We don't. Well, we did this last game and it actually worked.
Yeah, it did.
But, you know, make sure that you've got that carefully crafted group template so you know that the basic motivations of these evil characters are not going to conflict with one another in a way that would violate part one or part two.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the everyone's boundaries or the type of game you're trying to run. Something we kind of toyed around with in a prior episode, and I don't know if we're going to make this a regular segment or not, but, you know, hey, it's worth doing, is people send us in emails with kind of random questions. They'd just be fun little unicorn chasers to run out the episode on.
Mm-hmm.
So, Chad, go ahead and give us our one for today. Who's it from?
This is, oh boy.
Yeah, because this person had three basic questions.
Arjan Koster? Arjan? Arjan? Here, let me show it to you.
However we attempt it, we're going to get it wrong.
Yeah.
If we say Arjan, it's like Arhan or something. So
Arjan Koster, that sounds like some sort of 17th level wizard.
Yeah. Basically, I'm not going to read the whole thing, although it is a good email. He's asking me, he remembered from one of the earlier shows that I like cults and putting cults in my game. And I don't really make a study of them. I like to use them thematically in games and stories and stuff. So I completely make everything up. He was saying that he has a new player and that she, very good, likes cults and reads lots of stories about them and stuff.
Okay.
So why not run something with cults in it? But the problem is when he thinks of cults, he thinks of like conspiratorial organizations and Satanists who do lots of blood and sacrifices and weird sort of, you know, slayer kind of stuff. He wants to know, do you have any hints for running a game with cults? In particular, how to make them more than just some faction that's into satanic stuff. How to actually make them very culty is what he wants.
What a timely email.
Yes.
Actually, we didn't plan this, so.
Yeah, not
but
at all.
No, that's a great question because this just draws right into what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we could also first start with the thing that a cult, depending on the definition of you use, is not necessarily evil.
Right.
Now, I don't want to get into a huge tangential religious debate that would violate our own rules.
Somebody will send us an email. It's like, I belong to a cult that's not a cult, and they're not evil.
There are many definitions of the word cult, okay?
Right.
It's used in different way by different groups. If you even go to encyclopedias and dictionaries, I know this because I've done this, they will give you different definitions of cults.
Right.
So
we're going to talk about like the story, right. The cult, the bad. Well, in this case, we'll talk about bad guy cults.
Well, say because one particular definition is it's simply a small religious group.
Right.
And that's not the definition we're going to go with because we're not talking about minority religion here.
Are you saying that we don't want people to make PCs that belong to Heaven's Gate?
That's actually exactly what I was thinking of.
I was going to tell Chad, I've actually seen his purple jumpsuit and his Adidas shoes.
That's
so.
Right.
Because, I mean, something like
Heaven's... I missed the comment. What can I say?
I mean, something like Heaven's Gate, I mean, up until the end, I mean, these weren't, I mean, they were doing strange things, but it's not like they were eating babies or something. Sure. So,
actually, they were a very successful web development company.
Yeah, I mean, so... We're not going to get caught up in that, but let's assume that for a moment we're talking about an evil cult here.
Right.
How can you structure one in such a way
without making it sound like a couple of 13-year-olds in 1982 right. in their mother's basement with a couple of candles?
Well, and... you know, that's one of the first things I would do is I'd try and understand their belief system.
Right.
Because people on the outside of a cult will typically try to boil the cult down to its most...
Especially the Inquisition will try and boil the cult down.
Yeah, but you try and take the cult down to it's some very simple ideas.
Right.
But you know what? They probably have a fairly complex belief system. So mm-hmm. I'd begin there. I mean, this cult's got to have some kind of a belief system. And depending on the setting, maybe it's as simple as restoring the old ones to power.
Sure.
Because it's inevitable. So if they're going to come back, then we might as well be on the winning side.
Maybe it's a mystery cult.
But that's not necessarily true. Yeah. That's one of the most powerful types of cults.
I like... Personally, when I run a cult, I tend to do mystery cults.
Let's define mystery sure. cult.
Oh, me?
No, I can Let's, do it too.
I no, mean, I can do it. All right. So what a mystery cult is the idea that there are different levels of mind expansion or of knowledge or of, you know, deeper understanding of whatever the religion is. And you get in as an initiate and you don't know Jack and you just kind of do some basic rituals and stuff. And then as you prove yourself or give more money or do whatever it is you have to do.
Right.
You can go up to the next level, and it's a very ordered hierarchy system usually, and then they give you more knowledge, and they increase the mystery, and they swear you to more levels of secrecy and security and stuff, and you have access to more levels. And it's this goal. They used to be very, very appealing because it gave structure to people's lives, and it gave goals, and you're always wondering what happens next.
These were huge in the ancient world.
Totally.
There were... tons and tons and tons of these in the ancient world, because one of the great things that they use to attract people is the idea that you're getting something nobody else has,
right?
That this is somehow going to make you special, because if you practice this long enough and hard enough, you're going to get to some level of knowledge or some level of power or whatever that other people don't get.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what I'm talking about I suppose complexity of interest here, but also, you know, If you're going to use a mystery cult, I'd say, you know what, figure out what the levels of mystery
cults
are.
You know why mystery cults work so great in games? Is because it's a mystery. The players don't know. They know that something is going on, but they don't know what, and it could be sinister and that sort of thing.
You just got to be careful of one thing, which is, let's use The Happening, the movie, as an example.
Haven't seen it.
Mysteries are really compelling, but you have to be careful that the ultimate given the end is not a letdown for all the hype leading up to it.
It's like scales. You kind of have to balance it and stuff. Yeah, I tend to use mystery cults, and they have like the cool thing about them in a game also is that they tend to have secret locations, and they tend to have like secret handshakes and secret marks, and the characters can do investigations, and they can find clues, and they can decipher clues and study things and question people, and there's lots of activity that surrounds them that isn't just drawing a pentagram on the floor with blood and sacrificing something. That's boring.
Right.
And in fact, the creepiest cults are cults that don't kill anybody, but do more nefarious things.
Well, and even if you want to paint the pentagram on the floor and kill somebody, I would still say, okay, why?
Right.
What is the belief system that requires this? And just as importantly,
a kick murder cult can only get away with it for so long.
Right. So how are they continuing? How are they drawing members? How do they keep this going? And it seems like with most of these evil cults, you're going to have to do one of two things. In their belief system, either somehow they've convinced themselves this is good.
Mm-hmm.
They have some twisted way of rewriting this so that it's actually good.
Or they're getting something out of it.
Well, I say along those lines, it's necessary. Yeah. It's necessary for power they're gaining. It's necessary because, well, the old gods are going to come back anyway, so we might as well be on the winning side.
Right.
But, you know, even then, what is motivating these people to stop fighting it?
You know, another suggestion that I would give him is that this girl is, or woman or whoever she is, into cults. Like, she makes a study of it. Hit up Wikipedia.
Yeah. Dude,
go look at the article on mystery cults. I don't know if it's any good or not. I haven't seen it. And then start clicking at some cults that they might mention, or type in a known cults or whatever, and start looking at it. And don't rip off a cult, because you might be able to spot it. But, you know, definitely take a little bit from here, take a little bit from there. Read the Wikipedia article on Aleister Crowley.
Yeah.
Take some stuff from that. Take the stuff from not necessarily cults, but secret organizations such as the Masons or Skull and Bones, or, you know, the Hellfire Society. Things like that. And depending on your
Mason,
setting,
no, we're not calling Masons cults.
No, that's exactly right. I even said, you know, non-cult entities that are secret societies. And they have lots of really cool sort of rituals and ways and means within the organization.
You can't get deeper and more realistic than real reality.
Totally.
And so I would absolutely recommend starting there with real cults, real organizations like this. And actually, Chad, you mentioning Aleister Crowley brought something back to mind just because of the time period, which is throughout a lot of Europe in the 19th and 20s and 30s in particular, that got real popular again.
Totally.
Secret societies, all kinds of stuff. There's a lot of interesting stuff. If you read about, not so much like Hitler himself, but some of the people that were early on his, like his mentors, they were some really interesting stuff. And obviously we can say, you know what, their actions also resulted in some really bad things.
Now, I'll give a warning with this too, and it's not the scary, the cults are coming to get you warning. It's more of the, there is a lot of information out there, and you have to be careful on balancing this within your game. I mean, it's like you could get into, like, if you are interested in this and you start researching this, man, you can write pages and pages and pages and pages on a cult that just might be in one game. Really, you should look at how big of a part the cult or cults or secret societies play within your campaign. And then balance the level of details that you, the time that you're going to research it and the level of detail you're going to put into the game, because it would really, really suck if you got 20 pages of notes and the characters just blew through it and didn't care.
I'd also recommend, if he's going to do this, have some fun with it and hide it in plain sight.
Yeah.
I mean, if we're talking a fantasy campaign, and if we're talking D&D specifically, you know, right away you've got a character class that fits into your definition. Any monk is now part of basically your mystery cult.
Right.
Your various guilds, your fighter's guild, even your thieves guild is in that way. And hide it in plain sight. Make her not even realize that she's even a member.
That was a cool thing about Oblivion. I think the Assassin's Guild, if I'm not mistaken, they had this whole series of subplots and subquests in there. And all the Assassin Guild stuff was based around a cult. And it was really, the guild itself was just a front for the cult. And that's another cool thing you can do, which lends itself to gaming, is that these organizations can be using fronts as, you know, their thing. And the players don't know who to trust and who to talk to and stuff. And you can really, you know, make the players sweat and stuff. Like, they just question, they're trying to keep it on the down low, but they're questioning people about this cult. And the person they just question, you know, somebody walks in and they notice giving them the secret handshake. It's like, oh no, did I just reveal that I was looking for these guys? And I have a lot of fun with cults. And if you're in a magical setting, one of the successes I have is that I use dreams. Like, the cults influence people's dreams, or maybe not directly, but their activities cause negativity in the area, which have, you know, have a sort of presence in people's dreams and stuff. And that adds to the spooky mystery part of it. But yeah.
Before we get this, guys, two other questions, because they're kind of big unicorn chasers here for the end. Something.
Oh, it's just about you. That's why you
like it. These are wonderful. So these make Unicron smile. But something that I want to say here sort of as a closing note is, know thyself. If you're the type of person where running a game that's about evil or about cults or any of this stuff is going to put you in a funky mood, is going to distress you, is going to...
Yeah, sometimes this kind of stuff bothers some people.
Well, or for lack of even a better way of putting it, tempt you, don't do it. You know, I mean,
it's just a game.
There's no badge of honor for completing an evil campaign. There is nothing wrong with sticking to heroes and neutral characters.
Yeah.
So just use some good sense and sensibility here.
It's just a game. Don't make us look bad. Don't make the community look bad by being one of those people who...
And if your game master wants to continue the game with Steam tunnels, quit.
Yeah.
Call the police.
Honestly, I don't think those people exist. I don't think
I think they're an extreme minority, but...
Yeah. Well, I think that... Well, I could go on and on.
Right, point being, all right, let's get to the unicorn chaser here.
All right, this is all about you, Dan.
Yes.
My other question is actually for Dan. I would send him a mail, but after listening to a recent episode, I realized I better not add to his email production anxiety problem.
This man is full of wit and wisdom.
Yeah. Basically, he's asking, did you do an RPG based around the Ultima license?
Yes, I did.
Not official, right?
This it was not official, no. I mean, it's not like Origins or whoever now owns that property ever paid me to do anything. But just for fun, I was actually playing through Ultima 9. I'm one of like five people that really liked the game and actually was able to get it to work bugless enough to get to the end, which was a miracle unto itself.
Wow.
Because that's not easy to do.
Is that Pagan?
No, Pagan was eight. This was nine was Ascension or Ascent.
Hmm. Richard Garriott, Marty Stew,
yeah.
Fanboy Wank.
But it was what I ended up doing was basically I took some of the concepts in the game, reverse engineered enough of the math. And then what I had done was
added yourself in, added Spock and Kirk in.
Pretty much. It was a great
big. And then you got Harry Potter brooms.
Yeah. But I then took the playing card game from the Gypsy at the start. And what I was going to do was play a game where basically the players, I would have them go through this test to pick their ultimate virtue. And they would be an avatar of just one virtue. And I had a whole thing worked out on how they would do this. And they would derive powers from it, but they would also have responsibilities tied to it. Where if they failed, then they would start to become the opposite of the virtue and so on and so forth. So yeah, I did develop one. I've never done much with it because actually at the time I couldn't even convince the morons in my gaming group to play it. They just usual thing of, well, even though we've loved your games, you've been a successful GM for decades, we don't see how this could possibly work. And
that's the argument I keep hearing with superhero games, but
I think you have to be careful, but I'm willing to do them another time for another time. All right. What was the other question?
Basically, are you afraid of Richard Garriott?
Yes. Because
he is crazy.
Oh, yes, he is crazy.
And the specific is, has your fear of Richard Garriott changed, or are you still afraid that Richard Garriott, I'm sorry, Lord British
yes.
or General British, you know,
whatever he is now,
astronaut British,
cosmonaut British,
will chase him around with a cricket bat dressed in his underwear adorned with the British flag?
He would. No doubt.
And he's a giant floating head, you know, too.
Yeah, so there's absolutely no doubt in my mind that those things are possible.
Yes.
Richard Garriott scares the hell out of me. The man does not live in our reality. And what worries me is if it turns out that his reality actually is real in some kind of like Narnian or M.C. Escher way, where if you focus your eyes differently, you actually see his world. He's a man of vast power.
Yes. And he's a giant floating head.
And I'm really afraid to cross that.
Yes.
I don't know about you.
Totally.
To answer your question more seriously, there's a couple games that I've written over the years based on other people's properties. Mm-hmm. I've written a lot of my own too, but I've also written some, you know, based on Ultima, based on Transformers. I wrote one based on Robotech years ago. I mean, obviously there's a Palladium one out there,
but I wrote
my own at some point. And I've never been quite sure what to do with these because
They're totally illegal to publish.
Yeah, exactly. They're totally. I mean, there's nothing they can do about me playing them on my own, but yeah. I cannot start distributing these without getting a well.
You can actually. I mean, you can put them out there as sort of fan efforts, and there's tons of that around,
and they might do nothing about it as long as they won't.
What's the worst they can do is say, "Hey, take it down," right. And you take it down.
So the answer is yes. I don't know what I'm going to do with it, if anything. Actually, after Fear the Con and the positive feedback I got on the Transformer system, I'm right now trying to decide what to do with that one.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, maybe I'll run an Ultima game at Fear the Con one of these years. It'd be fun. It'd be pseudo serious.
Yeah,
but
you know, to go back a couple episodes, you might be able to make an RPG based on the movie Transmorphers.
That's right. That's why we had Tultum of the Tavatar, if anyone remembers that.
That's right. The rights for that one might not be that expensive.
Nice.
That's right. All right, so thank you guys for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.
See ya.
Later.
Later days.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2009. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com.